Because people also act like AI was just invented 18 months ago. And when I say people, I don't mean everybody, right? I'm not trying to say that universally. It's just that
You mean
AI.
disparagingly all the people you hate.
This podcast contains the arguably witty banter of two friends, Skippy and Doodles, that like to debate about investing. The content is intended to be entertaining and for informational purposes only, not investment advice. You should do your own research and consult a financial professional before using any of the information in this podcast, and especially before investing.
I ran into somebody yesterday who told me that this is what they call the limbo time here in Denver. The limbo time. And I was like, oh, say more. And he goes, because I get into my car and don't know whether heat or air conditioning is going to be on.
There's no limbo. You get in the morning and you need heat. And you get in the afternoon and you nearly die. It's so hot.
That's not wrong. I thought when he said it, there were so many things that were running through my mind as to the rationale. So when I said, oh, why? There was only one thing I didn't expect, and is what he said.
The difference between me and you is when someone comes up to me and says, I call this the limo time. You say, tell me more. And I run away, like just straight out of there. I don't want to know about the limbo time. That sounds scary.
Yeah, the limbo time.
Speaking of limbo, let's limbo into this listener mail. Hit that jingle.
Oh, hit it. They fight.
All right. I think people just, I think this is mostly directed at you, Doodles, but it came my way. I think people heard the shout out and just wanted to mess with you. So I got one piece of listener mail that is not related to investing at all. But Doodles, the man who travels to New Zealand and Australia for the Women's World Cup, has a reputation. The folks want to know what you thought of the NCAA Women's title game ratings, 18 million viewers versus the men's at only 14 million viewers.
Caitlin Clark, baby. Caitlin
Isn't that
Clark.
Amazing?
I think it's absolutely amazing. I hope that there's something that's able to stick there. I'll tell you what, though. Did you watch the game?
No, I missed the championship. I watched the Caitlin Clark games leading up to the title. Yeah.
She was just heaving at the end of that game. I'm like, you don't need to. There's 4 minutes left. You don't need to shoot a 40-footer. Like, there's no need for 40-footers here.
She wanted to Steph Curry it, man. I think she wants the limelight.
She Steph Curried it this year is the problem. She wanted to Steph Curry from a decade ago, but she was Steph Currying in the deuce, zero, deuce, quattro is the problem.
Counterintuitive take. I'm going to get in trouble for this, I think. I like her game. I find her personality on the court kind of annoying. She's always complaining to the refs, man.
Yeah, it's not wrong. The other thing that is I'm curious about, I'll say this here, is she's making $3+ million in college.
Mm-hmm.
Next year, she's going to make $80,000.
Her endorsements are going to carry through.
We'll see. I don't.
All right.
I hope
let's,
so. I hope
let's
so.
Put a friendly wager on that. I think she'll make roughly the same next year.
Okay. Here's what I actually want. Here's what I want to bet on. I want to bet not on next year, but on the year after. Because sure. I do agree that there's enough momentum to take it, but will it stick? So can we bet
I don't want that bet. All right, one more thing enough. On the women's sports front. Do you know about the Berkeley Marathon, the 100-mile ultra race in Tennessee with the crazy man? You ever seen this documentary?
Mm-mm. No.
Okay. It's like the Netflix documentary. It's a truly insane race that no one should run. For the first time this year, you have to run 100 miles in less than 60 hours. And it's like, there's no course. It's like not even running. A lot of it's like climbing trees, effectively. It's hard to describe. But there's a woman from the UK, Jasmine Paris, who finished 59 hours, 58 minutes, and 21 seconds.
Just in the nick.
Props
Just
to that, man. Props to.
Look at that. That's well timed. She got that down. I mean, she got that down to the segundo. I'm loving it.
All right. Now, the other piece of listener mail from it's going to get me really excited. So we're going to save that. I know we got some info from John. So let's talk about that. And then I'm going to lose my mind with a stock recommendation.
All right. John, thank you. Sent us over some listener mail from Business Insider. The name of this piece is America's New Age of Retirement Anxiety. People is anxious. And the premise is that we've shifted from a country, this is the United States of America, we shifted from a country where we had defined benefit plans to defined contribution. What that means is back in the heyday, the pre-1980s heyday, was what happened was your work would say, this is how much money you're going to get when you retire based upon the amount of money that you made while you're working for them. So you work 40 years, you make X amount of money. That then dictates how much money you get at the end. Now we're saying we got 401ks, we got RRAs. I tried to say that a different way. We got 401ks and IRAs. And what that is, as I mentioned, it's a defined contribution. So there's a certain amount you can put in, but you have to plan for how much you're going to save at the end. So the anxiety this is causing, according to this piece, is that people don't really know how to plan for retirement. So there's some fixed number, $1.5 million is what this states that people have in their heads as to how much they need when they retire, but they're not taking into account lots of stuff. Well, my kids need me to support them. Or maybe grandkids, like college. They're not taking into account fully like the medical bills they might have, the surprises, you know, that kind of stuff. And so what this is leading to is people's is anxious. 71% of people said they were at least moderately worried about being able to pay for their retirement and not getting any better. The government, the U.S. government, is in dire straits. I'm being a little bit hyperbolic, but we got a lot of debt. We got a lot of debt going on, right? Huge deficit. And so the question is, when the government has been talking about what they're going to cut, especially on the GOP Republican side, a lot of times it's things like Social Security. So it's likely not going to get better, according to this piece. That's where we're sitting with retirement. Old folks, last week we talked about how old folks are getting taken advantage of. This week we're talking about how they don't know how to save. What are we going to do about the old folks?
This sounds like kind of a scare piece. I could talk about this for hours. I'm not going to. I'm going to try and keep it really short. I think people often forget that at the end of the day, it's a relative game. Meaning, when you retire, your wealth is ultimately compared with the wealth of other people that retire in your generation. Whether you're competing to pay for the nursing home or medical care or whatever. And so sometimes you can really simplify and be like, you know what? I know very few people in my generation that are going to save 12% or 15% of their income for 40 years. Do something like that. Turn off your brain. You'll be just fine, would be my response.
I thought you were going to say just have rich relatives.
Oh, that works too. Yeah.
It's a relative game. That's what I thought you were going to say. I agree. I do. I think that the point around it being difficult for some people to understand how much to save, of course, because you don't know what's like, it's the unknown. Like it just is unknown in that point.
That's so I think the same. That's the number for someone that makes 300K a year is way different than the number for someone that makes 60K a year. And the cost of living for those individuals is totally. So a percentage of income really is a pretty good guide here.
No, yeah, I agree. If you're making and spending 300K a year, whatever, and you go, all I need is $1.5 million for retirement, boom, you know, gangsters. Like that, it sounds a lot easier, except your retirement's going to be 5 years. So it is a relative game. I fully agree.
How am I going to play for my three houses with only $1.5 million in the bank? I mean, come on.
They told me $1.5. Thank you, John.
Let's keep it moving. So within the last 3 months, we talked about David Einhorn of Greenlight Capital.
We did.
This gangster walked up on stage at an investing conference last week.
Okay.
And pitched this stock and tried to make jokes. He's not the most charismatic guy, as you know. tried to make some jokes. Hilarious. Presentation was not that compelling, except he was pitching a Belgian chemical producer called Solvay. Also not that compelling.
Wow. Belgian? Not followed by beer. Not followed by waffles. Not followed by frites.
Soda ash. Like peroxide. All right?
Wow.
This company just went through a spinoff, which appears to have depressed its value. I'm going to send two friendly reminders to the listeners. One, we don't give stock picks on the show. It's your job to do your own research. But the other recommendation is you're not allowed to front run Skippy when he buys this stock, because listen, on Monday morning when you're listening to this, you got to give me a few hours to put in my orders, try and load up on this thing. Here's why, Diggles. I will read the 10K probably this afternoon, so I haven't done all my research, but here's why. Price to earnings, 3. Price to book, 0.3. Price to cash flow, 1.3.
Wow.
Debt to equity, 0.3. Dividend, 15%. Price to sales, 0.2. This Hold thing. On,
can you repeat that dividend yield one more again?
14%. Now, and for the listeners who don't know, usually a dividend of 14% is a sign to run away from a company because it means their dividend is not sustainable. You should spend 20 minutes listening to David Einhorn's pitch on this and break down what their management team says about their planned future cash flows. This, what Einhorn said 3 months ago is like, we're done with worrying about other investors to try and discover value. He starts his presentation by saying, Warren Buffett said in the 1950s that stock picking was so easy because no one read the 10Ks. And he goes, that's actually where we are today. Everyone is just on TikTok investors and no one is doing the deep research. And so I don't care about any of these other clowns understanding the story. I'm just going to have the company be able to buy back the entire, like 100% of the shares in the next 4 years. That's his hypothesis for this stock. Again, research recommendation. My goodness, though, I look at cheap stocks all the time. I don't know. I can't remember the last time I saw something this cheap. And this cheap of decent size, Douglas, the market cap here is $3 billion. I would expect the market cap of something this cheap to be like $3 million, not $3 billion.
I'm going to give a different lens onto this. Yeah. Not a different outcome, but just a different lens. You gave fundamentals. Looking at the price of this stock, the history. So the stock has been public. Well, I mean, it's almost non-existent. The stock has been public for about 13 years.
Yeah.
The stock has done nothing over its lifetime, basically. It just fluctuated around the zero mark until a few months ago, in which it dropped 75%. That's the only thing. Like, the stock has not moved for 13 years, and then it dropped 75%. So even going back to your dividend yield that you talked about, I mean, the dividend yield has to do with the price. The price has dropped 75%, hence such a large dividend yield. If the fundamentals have not shifted that much from what the market has reacted to, then it makes sense that it would be sustainable. I haven't looked at anything, right? I haven't looked at 10Ks or nothing. I'm just looking at that one piece.
Yeah, it's complex because of the spinoff, right? So basically, they divided the business unit. We won't, you know, just go listen to someone smarter than me, certainly, give a 20-minute pitch on it. But it appears to be sustainable. Again, I have some research to do. It is just dirt cheap, and it's very likely I'll pick it up because I had some cash on the sidelines waiting Ooh. For Baba to take the next dip, and I like this. This seems more compelling than even something like that. So,
whew. All right. That's done with the listeners? We don't have the listeners now?
That's right. Yep.
Thank you, everybody, for the listener mail. Now, should we talk about another of your favorite investors? Should we reach out?
I don't know that he's one of my favorite investors. He's one of my favorite characters.
He's top 50. Top 50 your favorite investors.
Top 50. Sure. Top 50.
Reach of the Fishbowl and Cliff Asness, who we're talking about, who's come up a bunch. He's probably the most talked about, aside from maybe Kathy Wood, but most positively talked about investor on this show, because he comes out and says stuff, mostly is what it is. He had an interview with Meb Faber. That's the setup here. And talked about a couple things that gave you some confirmation bias and some things that also were a little bit more novel for you. Give some flavor to it.
What did you think of the part where he said, Skippy's 100% right about the simple path to wealth, and I fully endorse the Skippy and Diggles show? What did you think about that part of the?
I thought it was interesting that it followed directly with him saying that his fund has lost half of its value.
Hey, he did. I'm joking. He did talk 100% equities.
He did. No, he really
did. What do you think?
I think that, so what he's saying is very similar. This is your point. It's very similar to what you were saying. I thought it was well articulated. And he was saying, if you say that something has performed well for the last 30 years, and therefore I'm going to put 100% of my money into it for the next 30 years, this is the part that I loved. He says, that's silly. And the way what he take when he's making that argument, he said, where he takes it is he goes, okay, so what's the individual stock that has performed best over the last 30 years? And would you put all of your money into that individual stock? If not, it's the same logic.
And why is 500 the magic number? So say, oh, I just want to look at all the asset classes, which is effectively what these FIRE guys have done. Financial independence, retire early is the FIRE acronym there. And they've just said, well, like, dude, look at the S&P over the past 30 or 50 years. It's like, well, why not the top 300 stocks, or why not the top 1,000 stocks? Those are going to be the best performing. Or to his point, dude, have you seen what NVIDIA has done? Look, I'm going to do some back testing. It's all going to show that if I had 100% of my money in NVIDIA, I will be rich. And NVIDIA, Dougals, never crashes. Look at my back. My back test ended in April
2024. I love that you're using the word back test with an individual stock. So you're pulling up a stock chart.
This is the point. This is the point. That's what people are effectively doing. And they're being like, the S&P 500, best thing to do in the last 30 years. It just completely loses the context of where we sit today, which is so important.
I think it was well articulated. I get your point. It does come back to the simple path to wealth point. I agree with that. And my point around it was just simplicity, but I agree with this. I agree with this point. And he was saying that he says that people oftentimes will get the diversification point when it comes to stocks and bonds, but it starts to break their brains when it comes to leaving the US. He goes like that. Yep. That seems to be the line for some reason for folks, that foreign investments just do not seem to register for people. Because America, America, America. Mm-hmm. I get it.
What else stood out in the interview to you?
The other thing that you raised with me via textual message that was the idea of fundamental momentum. Fundamental momentum. So it's saying typically with momentum investing, you look at the price. You look at price momentum. What's moved over the last 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, and that momentum has a tendency to continue according to momentum lore. This is saying,
I mean, the backtesting on that is strong. And the reason I think of you when we talk momentum is your quantitative strategy. Yeah, it's a component of that.
Yeah.
So you make money based on that proven trend.
Yep. And this is saying fundamental momentum is when you look at not the price, but what it's like earnings surprises. Like what's the momentum on how many earnings surprises has it had over a certain amount of time? So you look at something that's based off the fundamentals, but the momentum of that fundamental movement. So you could think about this as saying this company spits out loads of cash or cash per share, whatever metric you want to look at. And if it does that over a certain period of time, you're saying its fundamentals are actually improving over time, not just the price. I think it's an interesting concept.
Yeah. And he shows that there's a limited correlation with price momentum. And so you can build a strategy around that. It's funny because I don't run like backtest behind the scenes that says there's a positive earnings trend and like formally spit that out of a model. But often when I'm looking at depressed companies, you're looking for positive trends with free cash flow, earnings, you know, everything else. And so in a way I kind of do it. It just really registered for me because you know that I know that momentum works, momentum investing works, but I always get freaked out when I get disconnected from the fundamentals. And it seems like there's a way to marry those that could work for my investor psychology and still like have more benefit on the positive upside of the momentum trend.
I like it. Thank you, Cliff.
It was good. Check that out for sure.
I'm going to stick on NVIDIA for a moment. Is that okay? Or do you want to go somewhere
that's
else?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Fishbowl reaching. Going to pull out NVIDIA 8 years ago today. I don't actually know, but I'm going to say 8 years ago this hour, Jensen Huang showed up at OpenAI with an AI chip. 8 years ago. There are a few different points to this. One that I like is that it was 8 years ago. There's so many times in business where it feels like something's an overnight success. Like it was like, oh, OpenAI released ChatGPT, and now NVIDIA has like, well, we should create the chips for that. And then, you know, it takes off. This was 8 years ago. You got to plan ahead in business, people. You got to plan ahead. So that's one point, but that's not the main point of this. The main point of this.
It's planting seeds, right?
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
You grow a bunch of trees, right? He planted the seeds at least 8 years ago for the massive run-up that's in the stock that's happened in the past 12 months.
Yeah, because people also act like AI was just invented 18 months ago. And when I say people, I don't mean everybody, right? I'm not trying to say that universally. It's just that
you mean AI... disparagingly all the people you hate.
Yeah, deplorables. No, I'm joking. All right. So that wasn't the main part of this. So this is a tweet that someone sent out. And then they laid out four principles that Huang says that he lives by, runs NVIDIA by. And I thought these were interesting and worth talking about. So that's really what we're talking about here. The first is have low expectations, but high standards. This, at first, I was like, come on, Jensen. I thought you was my boy. But I get what he's trying to say. What he's trying to say here is that oftentimes, in his view, people that have high expectations also have low resilience because they come into a situation. I think he was talking to like Harvard or Stanford or like some kind of Ivy League or semi-Ivy League school class, I think is what he was talking to in this little piece. And he's saying, like, all y'all, you expect that when you leave here, you're going to have high-paying jobs. Your like careers are going to be paved with gold ahead of you. And if that doesn't happen, then you end up flatting your butt because you don't know how to handle that. Whereas if you have low expectations but high standards, you have more resilience because little bumps in the road, they're just like little bumps in the road. You go, whatever. But you still hold yourself to a high bar. That's what he's saying there. That was an interesting way to look at it. I've never thought about it that way. Next, he said, no task can be beneath you. If the toilets need to be cleaned, clean the toilets. And his point here is with regard to a company is that there are often times where someone will be like the big boss person and they'll go, no, it's your job to do that spreadsheet. It's your job to create that PowerPoint, whatever, you know, whatever it might be. And he goes, no, like if someone needs to take notes, you take notes. Like yeah. The notes need to get taken. So do the dag nab thing.
The it kind third, of speaks to low expectations, right? Like you're not above it all.
Yeah, I think that's right. The third, structure your company or your department the way it needs to get structured and not according necessarily to a template that exists out there. He says oftentimes what happens is people go, well, we run a chemical company and chemical companies have this org structure, so let's just have the org structure. And he goes, you have to know, you have to understand the DNA of your company, the culture of your company, and what best works for not just the organization of the company, but the moment in time. What structure do you need for this moment in time? I think this is right and also can be kind of dangerous.
It's super dangerous.
Speak on it.
So I love the way his company is structured, but everyone reads those articles when it's the best performing stock of the last 24 months and takes it as gospel and says everyone should do it. If I remember correctly, the way his individual directors are structured, he doesn't do one-on-ones with them. He also has 24 direct reports. Like it's super unique. And basically, I think they exchange written communication once a week. And the only time they talk is if he or they flag that like something is being escalated.
It's
something
it's
like
a lot
that,
of
right?
Autonomy. A lot of autonomy. Yeah. Or maybe not even autonomy. It's like beyond autonomy. It's not quite to Tony Hsieh's holacracy, not quite, but it's trending in that direction.
And it's awesome. I love that he was creative enough to build a company that works for the way he works. I think that's the most important thing. But also, very often, as I work with small companies and then as they grow to mid-sized companies, the commonalities of your mid-sized company are there for a reason. Like that level of rigor and structure provides benefit. And if something works for 90% of companies, my only point is there's probably a reason that 90% of companies use it.
And another side of this is something that you say all the time with regard to investing is when Warren Buffett says do a certain thing, like Warren Buffett can do that. That doesn't mean that that's right for you. It's very similar to what you're saying here. He's like, look, if you are Jensen Huang, structure your company how you need to structure it. You know what I mean? If you're Michael Jordan, do the killer crossover and then pull up. If you're Michael Jordan, jump from the free throw line to dunk. Why doesn't everybody just jump from the free throw line to dunk? I get that point.
Because they can't. I mean, I can't even wear leather jacket and look as cool as Jensen. So
that's,
I'm not
that is true.
Try and run
that
my
is true. I will say though that I am just as successful jumping from the free throw line to dunk as I am jumping for right underneath the basket.
It's
to
a
dunk.
Great point, actually. Yeah.
So why not jump from the free throw line? Last, environment is the product that makes the product. I do really love this one. This is about company culture and how you structure your company. He's saying that the environment of your company is the first product to create. And that environment then enables you to create the products that you make. I think it's a really cool concept. I think it's fairly meaningless to most people. It's just like a Sun Tzu type phrase. But I also think that it's true.
Yeah, I like it.
Vidya, baby.
All right, I want to reach into my fishbowl and throw some shade at a surprise person, Dougals.
What? I got a maid in the shade, baby.
You sent me this text message this week. This is mostly so I can laugh at you about Perion Networks. And I dove in to the fundamentals, right? Price to earnings 5, price to book 0.8. Price to cash flow 4. I was like, I'm going to pick this thing up. I think I said exactly, as soon as I read the 10K, like, I'm buying this. Thanks for the recommendation. Till I read the news about it. And they are under investigation for fraud, Dougals. Give me some background on this.
They are under investigation for alleged fraud.
What is that?
No, I didn't make it that far. So this was, I've mentioned Perion Networks on the show before, I think in the fall. It was a stock I came across and I went, the stock is looking pretty good, but it's a little too pricey for where I am. So I set a price alert. And the other thing, I read through the 10K back then and went, it's concentration in Microsoft. Like, it's pretty reliant upon Microsoft as a customer. What they do, it's an ad company. And I went, I don't know how I feel exactly about the concentration. So that's why I need like more, the price to be a little bit lower for me to feel better. So I had the stock on my watch list and I had a little alert. And that alert went off and I was like, oh, this giant just dropped like 25% today. Like, it might be a pickup, but I need to look back at it. And that's what I texted you before. I didn't look at anything. All I saw was the stock drop. And then I texted you about it.
A cautionary tale. When it hits your price point, make sure there's not fraud happening. Speaking of, let's continue the jokes on single equities. Intel, proud Intel holder over here.
Hold on. Actually, before you go on. And also in these cases, this is not always the case, but in cases like this, I did not have a limit order set. I had a price alert to then investigate it.
And that's really good. There's a reason to have a price alert rather than a limit order, because you don't want to pick up the trash. It's falling out the trash heap.
Yeah, I'm not a trash panda. Okay, go on about Intel. Speaking of trash.
Proud Intel holder over here, although that's basically a joke. It's become like the Kohl's joke because Intel just cannot even walk straight. They like literally cannot walk a mile without stubbing their toe 10 times. Dougals, this week they announced they have a better chip. It's coming out. It's better than the NVIDIA H100. Fraction of the cost, 40% better power efficiency, 50% better speed or something. I just want to go on the record and say, there's no chance this actually works. There's no chance this chip actually works. There's like the Intel's recent history. It's just like, oh, what? It's going to be great a year from now. And it never actually happens.
Man, it gets sad for me sometimes with companies like this. I mean, this is where you go back decades and you got the founding of Intel with the folks that came out of Fairchild Semiconductor is legendary. You got Andy Grove, like Andy Grove as a human is legendary. Andy Grove is a CEO, also legendary, created so many of the things like OKRs, for example, came basically from Andy Grove.
Yeah.
Then John Doerr made them popular through Google, et cetera. But it's such a legendary company. When you have a company like that and the reaction from a shareholder is you just came out with this thing and it's unlikely to work is just sad.
I think this is from memory, but I think NVIDIA's price, which if there was a true competitor in the market for a fraction of the cost, should be halved. I think it moved, like, I think it might have gone up, and Intel's stock did nothing. I mean, no one believes this.
Intel comes out with new innovation, NVIDIA stock goes up.
Because no one believes it. If you could sell the H100, which the H100 is like on back order. I mean, that's driven all of the stock movement. If you could sell something that's faster, more power efficient for a fraction of the cost, the market would react almost immediately. It just didn't. It's sad though. Yeah, I'd love for Intel to find their way, but man,
it's sad.
Yeah.
Super sad. I'm going to take us from sad land. Actually, we're going to stay in sad land, but we're going to be like in the place of sad land that's like sad, but a little bit fun, right? A little bit of the fun going on. All right. So I'm going to play a little something for you and then let's talk about it.
This is the sketchiest thing I'm doing to make extra money. I've started selling trade lines on my credit cards. I'm using this site. This isn't sponsored. I just want to point out that they're like legit. And so essentially what this is, if a person has bad credit, but they know that they need to get a mortgage or a car loan or something, they pay money to this website. This website matches them up with me based on what they're looking for. And I add them as an authorized user to my credit card for a set amount of time. They don't physically get any sort of card. They don't get my name. They don't have my information. I have all of their information. But the thing is, because they're an authorized user, they get my credit history.
Please comment.
Well, it goes on for another like 90 seconds. I wish this lady would go to kiva.org and give a loan to someone in Africa for $10 to like help build their farm and actually change the world rather than trying to make... What was she making here? $20 to $40 per authorized user?
Something like that. I think at some point she says that she has about 8 of these going on roughly, and she's made about $200.
I mean, why? On all sides. So one, assuming this all works, the person with bad credit has bad credit for a reason.
Gosh, not anymore. I mean, no longer will the injustice of their bad credit exist.
Well, one is the massive fraud on all sides that could easily be prosecutable if you choose, you know, like, because, and two is the, like, I know in America we hate banks and we hate finance providers, but like those people are being misled in a way that has if we all use a credit card in this country and there's more defaults because people are deceiving the credit card companies, the society pays for that. This is just sad. Like, I can't even be fired up about it. It's a terrible idea on all sides. The people that need to improve their credit have to provide all the information you need to steal someone's identity, like your social security number, your address, your phone number, everything. It's just sad.
We have run up credit so much in this country that now we need other people's credit. That is ridiculous. I'll also say this. I'm fairly certain that if you added me as an authorized user to one of your credit cards, I don't get your credit history. Like, I think that is a false statement. I believe that it's a way. This is what another thing that surprised me here. Independent of the terrible idea that it is, right? Or maybe in addition to, is that it's a way to build credit. Like, if you have a kid, like your child, and you want them to build credit, you can add them as an authorized user and they will build credit. That doesn't mean they get your credit history.
It's just shady on all fronts. You know who Bill Walton is, right?
Yeah.
When UCLA joined the Big Ten, he's the proudest UCLA grad. He said, this is something along the lines of, this is the first time I've ever seen people on the West Coast run to the Midwest to solve their problems. I love the quote, but there's a parallel there. Debt is never the solution to your debt problem. Like, you know, you got in trouble with debt. Taking out more debt is not the solution. The solution is working hard, sacrificing, and not being reliant on debt. It just, you're right. Society is broken in this sense.
This lady's excited about it, though. She's excited. I mean, she had to tell the world about what is happening here.
Which is another problem. For $200, dude. I mean,
that's penny wise, pound foolish. And I'm not saying $200. It is a good amount of money. Like, that can pay a couple bills. It can be part of rent. Like, I'm not saying that $200 is not a lot. I'm saying $200 is not a lot for what she's doing.
It's the same though. If she really needs $200, I mean, this is a bad example, but sign up for Uber and go make some runs. Like, do something. Go earn $200 in an old fashioned, honest way.
But this
maybe
is
I'm just
Uber.
Antiquated
this is this. Uber for credit histories. I was reading something the other day. Some guy started a company and he described it as Uber for substitute teachers. And I my brain went, what is, I have less idea about what your company is now than I did a minute ago before I started reading about it.
You know, you didn't realize you were throwing me a softball. I own a small portion of a startup that's Uber for movers. And they go on, you go on the app and say, like, I need someone to move my couch. Like, I can't move my couch. They show up 45 minutes later, move your couch, take a small fee, leave. I love it.
So just a moving company.
Yep. With some tech. With some technology behind it. And
we just described that as a moving company.
It's not. No, no, no. Anyone can show up to lift the couch after you pass a background check and stuff. Like, it's not like you work as a mover. That's 100% of your job. It's just like, no, you're a big guy or a couple big guys that want to go make $75 for beer money.
So like a moving company.
It's going to change the world, Diggles. You just wait.
It's going to change the world one couch at a time.
It's better than Uber for substitute teachers.
Yeah, well, nearly anything is. This company that steals your credit history is better than Uber for substitute teachers.
No, it's not. No, it is not.
Let's reach in the fishbowl and talk about Peloton. It's been a little minute. It's been a hot minute since we talked about Peloton. And Peloton continues to Peloton. is like the headline here. The name of this article actually is, you ready for this? Peloton's bumpy ride from a pandemic high of 50 billion to 2.1 billion as of December 23rd, the business strategy has become as inscrutable as its fandom. That's all what's at the top of this article. It's in The Verge by Victoria Song. Let's make this quick. This whole piece is saying, I do not understand what the heck Peloton's trying to do. But people love it so much. That's what this is a long article. That's what it's all about. I'm going to give you an example of love it so much. Jessica Fernandez is a Peloton user that's brought up in this piece. Here's the quote. On a day-to-day basis, she has her regular workout that includes runs, bike, strength, or boot camp classes, which combine cardio on the bike or tread with strength training. Then she listens to Peloton's outdoor classes while walking the dog. Before bed, she fires up the app to listen to a guided meditation. When she went to a friend's wedding, she was at her hotel gym taking Peloton classes.
This sounds like a typical Skippy and Dougal's fan.
Yeah. Fire up that app, baby. I'm talking weddings.
Is now the time to tell them we're going to have the outdoor workout podcast?
It sounds just like this is the thing. So if you're expecting curls, bench presses, no, sir. No, sir. But that is the point of this, is it's saying that Peloton is becoming a media company. It talks about how one of their instructors went to the finale of So You Think You Can Dance or whatever, one of those, Dancing with the Stars. That's the one, Dancing with the Stars. It's like, and they got there because of how popular the instructor is with not a small group of people. I don't mean to say, because it's a lot, it's millions of people.
Yeah.
But with a concentrated base of individuals.
It's like mini YouTube fame.
Exactly.
It's like a YouTuber, but for a very specific type of athlete.
That's exactly right. They recalled their treadmills, as you might recall. And people refused to return them. They said, people die on this treadmill.
Their
Please treadmills send it
sweet.
Back.
I'm a fan of their treadmills. I like it. Now, I would return mine. I don't have one, but I'd give it back if they told me I was going to die on it.
Yeah. People have died on this treadmill. Please send it back. And people said, no, I will not send it back to you. This is absolutely insane to me. That's the whole point. I got nothing else.
Well, so if they are a media company now, I think that's a tough road. Do you remember long ago? You remember like 15 years ago when Nike Run Club came out?
I do. Yeah.
Gosh, it was sweet. And they're the perfect, you know, they had like these GPS watches long before the Apple Watch, and they built communities. They'd go city by city. It was incredible, but they're not really in the space anymore. Like, this is so tried and true by everybody under the sun. and no one's really turned it into a profit engine. I don't know. Peloton is an interesting one. Here's what I do. I can't read the articles you sent related to Peloton anymore because I'm just over it. I know exactly what they're going to say. The company sucks, like from a financial perspective. But listen to the how I built this on the original founder. It's so fascinating. And caught lightning in the bottle. It was one of the most revered companies. I have an old employee. She came to me when I first hired her, said, my dream is to work for Peloton in New York City. And I said, let's make that happen. She works for Peloton in New York City. That was
like she still
all
does?
Her generation wanted to do. She's still there. But it's just hit a tough spot. Patch, man.
How long is a patch?
Good point. I wish them all the luck in the world. That's what I'll say.
All right. Fair enough. All right. That's a wrap.
All right, guys. We love the listener mail. SkippyDougals@gmail.com. Again, we're in Omaha soon for the Berkshire event. Come see us. Dougals is apparently making stupid t-shirts. I don't know if I'm going to wear them or not. But premium subscriptions if you want to get the show on Sundays instead of on Mondays and learn about our stock picks and stuff. There's two tiers there. That's SkippyDougals.supercast.com. There we go. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you, everybody.